Okay, thank you very much for your patience here. I'm Dick Davis. I'm the new chair of the Employment Committee. And I wanted to start out with just a kind of a quick history of the Employment Committee. It started as a job exchange committee. Fatosh Floyd got it going back in, what was it, Fatosh, in 2001? Yeah, yeah. So she got it started, and it started out really as kind of an interesting idea. Group of us get together in a room. If you're looking for a job, you came to the room and talked about the job you're looking for. If you knew of a job or had a job to offer, you came to the room and talked about your job, and people asked questions. You know, it was basically a simple process, but actually very effective because people got jobs that way. And it's kind of developed some through Fatosh and then through Buna Dahal, who was chair after Fatosh. Buna was unable to be here, so I was not able to introduce her. But I do have a little presentation for Fatosh. So Fatosh, could you come up to the table here? Yeah, just right here is good. Okay, well, when people are chairs of things, they usually give them these great big, huge, engraved gavels. But I'm cheap, and so I don't do that. But I'm also practical. So I came up with this little gold gavel pin that I thought you might actually wear. So here you are.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. You're welcome. And if I find Buna, I've got one for her, but she's not able to come today. Okay, well, I'm really glad to see so many people here today. We will do our best to give you lots of helpful information, I think, that will help you to get a decent job. We have some really good presenters who are coming in. They're on the agenda, so I won't take any time to introduce them. Obviously, everybody listens to the news, and this thing that we're in, some people call a recession. You know, some people have called it worse than that. I don't know exactly what it is. I do job placement with blind people, and my students are continuing to get jobs through whatever this is. And so, I think a lot of it comes down to, you know, do you really want a job? Are you willing to put in the effort? Because one of the things that can actually help if you're blind is that it's the sighted people that give up first. It's the sighted people who look at the statistics and say, there's no way I'm going to get a job, and, you know, I'm going to go on to college or something else. But blind people are used to facing adversity. And so it's been my experience that, you know, the job market may be good, the job market may be bad, but the people I've worked with keep on working, and because of that, they get jobs. So, you know, whatever the statistics are, whatever the news reports, you know, ultimately, I've been doing this for 40 years, and I have never known a blind person who wanted a job, who worked at it, to fail to get a job. Not a single person. The only people I've known who didn't get a job were the ones who gave up, and they didn't get jobs because they gave up. So there's bright news. I've been through recession periods before, and the people that I've worked with have done as well finding jobs in the recessions, you know, as otherwise. So hopefully that's some good news that you want to think about here. And this is kind of an abbreviated introduction from what I was going to do. But yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Mary Ellen Gabias, and I'm working now with a project that the National Federation of the Blind is conducting with eBay Corporation. You've probably heard about it in the Monitor, but we're working with blind people who don't want jobs but want to be entrepreneurs, and that's a kind of way to employ oneself and earn money. There are going to be 4 seminars at this convention related to eBay. The one this afternoon is dealing with the accessibility of the eBay website. And in order to participate, you will actually walk yourself through putting, be walked through putting in a listing that you would, of a product that you would sell on eBay. If you have a netbook or a laptop and want to participate in that seminar, we had been requesting pre-registration, but eBay was able to work out some accounts that you can use as practice accounts. So if you don't have your own eBay account, you can participate. So if you come to room number 20, I think it's Wikiwa or however you pronounce it, 20 this afternoon, you'll find it in your agenda. That seminar is now open. First come, first serve. We'll cut it off at 30 people. Yes, sir, that's correct. Bring your own netbook or laptop. Pardon? I believe so. I'll have to look. One of these rooms, yeah. I think it's on the other side, though. Yeah, on the other side. And then for the rest of the week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, there are going to be three repeats of the same seminar, which is about eBay strategies, how to how to put listings up on the website, but deciding what to sell and writing up listings that will encourage people to look at what you're selling and buy it. It's more of a strategic seminar, and you do not need a computer for those, and there's no pre-registration. So just wanted to make sure you were all aware, and I thank you very much for the time.
All right. Well, we'll move on then to our first presenter, who is David Tiki. I've known David Tiki for probably too many years, or he's known me for too many years, however it goes. He's a really interesting guy. He has been a teacher for a number of years. He is also special assistant to the president of Legal Seafood Corporation, which is another thing he took on not too many years ago. So, got both things, teacher, high up corporate guy, and he's going to talk about beyond technological uncouth, don't forget the human element.
Thank you. Again, I want to thank Dick and Fatusha and Buna for their good work and bringing us to where we are today. My presence today on this panel and seminar day really evolves from a conversation I had with Dick several months ago, which began this way, about blind people looking for work, making contacts, and in many ways, not doing it in what I would call a real appropriate way. Now, speakers today will discuss here the importance of having skills. That's a given. We need our blindness skills. We need orientation and mobility. We need technical skills. We need braille skills. We need the social skills. And in many ways, what I think is so important today, an area in which I believe many of you would know of, it's becoming more and more discussed in academics, colleges, universities around the country, is emotional IQ. Anyone here of emotional IQ? Yeah. I am a strong believer in emotional IQ. I'm also a strong believer in IQ in general, but in emotional IQ, I am a strong believer. For those of you who aren't familiar with the concept, studies have shown that we have a certain emotional IQ in development which connects to our ability to relate to others and build and foster relationships. And it has shown that the more successful presidents and CEOs in this country and other successful people have a very high level of emotional IQ. It doesn't mean they were the valedictorian. It doesn't mean they have a super high IQ. But what it does mean is that they know their skill set, they know their strengths, they know their limitations, and they're able to relate to others and to build teams. So how did this come about, this conversation? Well, I said to Dick, I said, you know, several weeks ago, I received an email from a young man whom I've known for 15 years. He then was in middle school. He's now an adult. He's looking for work. We've come to know each other over the years. But I hadn't communicated with him or he with me either via email or via telephone for several months. I receive an email from him stating the following. I'm applying for a job. I'm using you as a reference. Thanks for your help. So it had no indication of what the job was or that this email was a heads up to be followed by a telephone call to give me more information so I could better custom my remarks if I had to write something or if I had to speak over the telephone with his potential employer. That's one thing, and that happens. I'm not saying it's not a good thing to use email to contact people regarding references, but what I would encourage people to do is to use the telephone and speak to those people to tell them more about it. Plus, every personal contact you make with that individual or others builds and fosters a relationship. And there's one thing that email and all kinds of social networking lack, and that's personal affect. You don't get to hear the person's voice and the what is truly behind that. Similar situation. Another person is speaking to me about a possible contact for a reference. We're speaking on the telephone. Now, remember, this person called me, okay? Called me for some help. So I am ready to provide the name, telephone number, email address, and mailing address for this individual. I'm saying it to the person on the phone. Person says to me, quote, can you shoot me an email with that information? End quote. Now, I'm going to cut this individual a little slack because sighted or blind, sighted people or blind people, we can be in situations where we can't take down a name or a number or an address. Sighted people may be without pencil or paper. They, like ourselves, may be without a cell phone that we aren't able to enter that number into or an address or a little note taker and so on. I'll cut this person a slack. But for some people, it is their M.O. And I'm going to tell you right now, if I'm sharing this information with you, and then you're asking me to shoot it to you in an email, why should I have to give it to you twice? Now, if I'm going to hire you, and I got to give you information twice, or if I'm considering hiring you, and I have to give you information twice, how do you think that'll factor into my decision? Not well. Okay. So what I am suggesting is be prepared to take notes and jot down numbers and addresses. Now, many of you are here today, and I can tell by some people are taking notes. Other of you are not. That's your personal prerogative. That's your decision. But it is essential that you know how to take notes and to jot down a phone number. And I mentioned earlier skills, the various technical skills, and I'm not going to get into that. Others will get into that today and so on. So technical skills were given. But I think even if you are not, or any of us are not, proficient Braille readers, we should know enough Braille to jot down a name, address, and phone number or to label folders in our documents. Now, for whatever reason, some of us may not be able to be speedy Braille readers or perhaps not able to learn Braille at all. But, you know, with all the technology there is, I've often said to individuals, the day that sighted people give up pencil and paper, I'll give up my slate and stylus. Okay? So that is essential, absolutely essential. And a lot of blind people are not capable of doing that. So those are part of the skill set. Now, Dick, in his introduction to me, and I want to share this with you, and then perhaps we'll take some questions, but I want to give some background to this and why the social skills and networking are so important. In my career, I've had essentially three major employments. It began first with the Newton Public Schools in Newton, Massachusetts. Newton is a suburb of Boston, and I began teaching seventh grade English in the Newton Public Schools in 1971. I live in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and because I'm kind of a physical fitness person, I have gone regularly to work out at the Cambridge YMCA. While at the Cambridge YMCA, I met a person named Roger Berkowitz, among many, many others. I made many, many wonderful friends from my exercise at the Cambridge YMCA. I mean, the benefit was not just physical, but was beyond physical. It was just making some wonderful friendships over the years. In Cambridge, there's a... the original legal seafoods restaurant was in a section of Cambridge called Inman Square. Well, Roger and the Berkowitz family owns that restaurant, and it has grown to today to now over 30 and what's reputed to be the number one seafood restaurant organization in the country. Still family-owned, no franchises. I share this with you because as legal seafoods grew and my friendship with Mr. Berkowitz grew, and his family, my career grew with the Newton schools. I took a little, you may find interesting, I took a little sabbatical from education, and for about 10 years worked with Xerox Kurzweil, actually going back to 1978 when Jim Gashel and Michael Hinkson were working with the NFB and the development of the Kurzweil, what was then called reading machine. Raymond Kurzweil lived in the community where I taught, and he learned of me. I learned of him. I made a very, very difficult decision to leave teaching and to work with this new innovative technology, which to me was socially meaningful and important. And it was a very difficult decision. It wasn't that I didn't care about teaching. I chose to go with the company. I grew with the company. It was purchased by Xerox, and I became major accounts and international marketing manager with many training responsibilities. And that was a wonderful time in my career. After that time, however, I missed education. Many of my colleagues were then at North High School. So I decided to go back into education, and while I was at Newton North, I was asked to direct a program, an alternative ed program. It was not special education. It was alternative ed program. And it was for students who came out of DYS facilities and went to school friendly. Now, I mentioned I went back to Newton North. I had to be rehired. But what was important then is the principal at Newton North was one of my colleagues whom I had stayed in touch with over the years. Now, we may now call this networking or whatever, but he was now the principal. Another colleague who I knew in the city, was the superintendent, knew of me and my reputation. I was rehired into the school system, and I was asked to direct this program for these students who came out of youth detention centers, and as I said, they were truant. They weren't too school friendly, long story short. And I wanted to set up a program for them, not only academically, but to connect school with the world of work. Well, we connected them with Legal Seafoods to do internships and job shadows. We also, by the way, did some social service work. We went into Boston and cooked lunch for women at Holman's Women's Shelter in the city of Boston. And you might say, well, was it all just cooking with this restaurant organization? No. As a matter of fact, Legal Seafoods tests all the sod and tuna fish for mercury in a lab before it goes to the restaurants. All the shellfish are tested for bacteria. So we had kids doing projects there. But again, that connected with my friendship, my contact with Mr. Berkowitz. That evolves into what I am doing today with special assignments at the company, at Legal Seafoods. I'm responsible for the President's Advisory Council, where we get a representative from each of the 31 restaurants, also the company's ethics program, and I have responsibilities, administrative responsibilities at Newton North High School. I have to say, I feel blessed in my career to have had worked with the Newton Public Schools, Kurzweil Computer Products, and Legal Seafoods. But the common thread that runs through my employment career has been, for me, fostering and nurturing and building those personal relationships. Obviously, it's essential, too, that I have the skills and that I can be a contributor, and that I believe that we as blind people can compete. Now, I want to kind of wrap up my remarks and then take some questions. I mentioned at Legal Seafoods we have an ethics program. All 4,000 employees will be embarking on a program of ethics. It's a two-hour, basically, how to make good decisions, how to distinguish right versus wrong decisions from right versus right decisions, which are true dilemmas. Right versus wrong is a moral temptation. A right versus right decision is really an ethical dilemma. Well, we worked with a company called the Institute for Global Ethics, and they have a newsletter that comes out every week, Ethics Newsline. And I was reading an article in this Ethics Newsline, and it began about cheating in high schools. In high school, cheating is prevalent. Over 50% of high school students acknowledge they have cheated. Okay? It is prevalent. And the author of this article is saying, why am I telling you this about this, people reading the Ethics Newsline? The reason I'm telling you about this is these people who cheated in high school are going to be your future employees. Whether you work in the private sector, the public sector, no matter where you work, wholesale, retail, whatever it may be, they're going to be your future employees. So they asked Warren Buffett, what do you look for when you hire someone in your organization? And this maybe brings it back around full circle. He said, when we hire people, we look for three things: integrity, intelligence, and enthusiasm. Okay? Now, again, this puts back all, looks, again, a given. There's all these different job skills I've mentioned, and others will speak in greater detail about today. Integrity, intelligence, and enthusiasm. Now, which did you think he sees as most important? Okay. I heard integrity. I heard enthusiasm. Anyone else? All right. Well, here's what his response was. Number one, integrity. If you don't have integrity, the other two will kill you. Okay? And what he meant by that is, if somebody doesn't have integrity and has a good work ethic, is honest, is accountable, then regardless how intelligent they are, how enthusiastic they are, they're not going to be using their time to be the most productive and most efficient employee that their supervisor or management team is going to want them. Integrity is number one. It is your brand. You know, in this day and age, in this economy, we're always hearing about brand. You can't put a price on brand. Well, I've often said this with students, and I share this with you this morning. If you walk away forgetting everything else that I shared with you this morning, recognize that your brand is your reputation, is your name. You can't put a price tag on it. And if you're not known for being accountable or being honest and so on, you're not necessarily going to get good references. And if you don't follow up with thank you notes, or if you don't make personal contact with people, that's part of your brand. If you say you're going to get something to someone, get it there. If you tell them you're going to have it by next Monday and you don't have it by next Monday, call them or email them, make contact and say, I don't have it, but I haven't forgotten you. Because your brand is your accountability and how accountable you are. How often, everyone in this room has had response from others, it's been crazy lately. It's just got crazy. I'm sorry I didn't get back to you. Anybody ever hear that? Yeah. All right. Well, crazy or not, I'm going to tell you one area where there's no discrimination. We all get 24 hours in a day. Okay? Okay? And we all have a free will and intellect. And we all have disposable time just as we have disposable income. And how you choose to use your disposable time and how you use your free will and intellect and how accountable you are, how honest you are, and how respectful you are, and how responsible you are with others, that is your brand. That is your integrity. Matter of fact, Roger Berkowitz and I have sat down and talked sometime. We were talking about salaries. Yeah, salary is important, but I'm going to share with you today. You could pay somebody $50,000 a year or $150,000 a year. And if that person isn't honest, the extra $100,000 isn't going to make any difference. So it's integrity, number one. It is your brand. Make personal contacts. Make good use of your emotional IQ along with the social skills, the technical skills, and what we call our set of brain skills to interact with others. And as I said, that personal contact, whether it be via through the telephone or just going by someone's office or just making contact, and can foster and nurture relationships and really begin to network for you and be to your benefit. So I'm going to pause there, Dick. Do we have time for some questions?
Sure. I could have a mic and take it to anybody who wants it, if they want to ask a question.
Yeah. If you have a question, stand up and speak up. And identify yourself if you do have a question. I hope I didn't put everybody to sleep.
Hello? Hello? It is? Okay.
Hi, Jim Jack. My name is. Say integrity is the most important thing to say or to keep in mind, but we do have those crazy days. And how do we recover from those crazy days?
The suggestion I made, if you see yourself in a position where you're not able to complete a task or get back to someone in the amount of time you told them did, email or pick up the phone. And again, I'm a great believer in the phone. I believe in email. Send an email. Tell them you may follow up with a call. And be honest. Just be perfectly honest. Just say, look, I want to get this done. These things have come up. You know, but it's not appropriate just to let it go because it reflects on you.
Mm-hmm. In this day and age when we have so much of our contact based on a cell phone and a caller ID, my phone just broke, and I don't know what to do, and I can't contact anybody. So I need, if anybody knows about the T-Mobile Dash, how to get it to turn over, I'd really appreciate that help. I guess I could do that in a week from today or a week from Monday. Thank you.
Dick, any other questions?
Okay. I was wondering, do you have a website with more information, or do you have an email we can stay in contact with you if we have any more questions?
I don't have a website, and you know, as Dick introduced, you probably heard my name. My last name is Tiki, and I always tell people I'm a Tiki and not a techie. But I do technical things. I don't have a website. If you would like to get in touch with me, you can send me an email at dtiki. It's TICCHI at Comcast.net. And and in that email also, put in your telephone number. If you do contact me, give me your telephone number, because I'd much rather have a conversation than keep sending lengthy epistles back
and
forth.
Thank you.
How about another question?
Hello, I'm Stephanie Martinez from Albuquerque, New Mexico. I am a first-time college student starting next month. And what's your suggestion of getting started of notes and things that you have started to talk about?
Stephanie, first of all, I think before the meeting began, I was sitting in front of you, and I thought I overheard you say that you had just graduated from the New Mexico Center, so I want to say congratulations.
Yeah.
And congratulations. And Stephanie, if I understand your question correctly, is sit in on this meeting, this seminar today, take some notes, think about things, and begin to make contacts. As you look for employment, you know, perhaps there's an area you can volunteer in. Even if it's unpaid, an untrained internship, volunteer, but make your presence known. I can tell you the first public school teaching job I had. Do I have time to share any anecdote, Dick? You know, people may not be aware. I mentioned I began teaching in 1971. But until the 1960s, in virtually every state in this country, there were visual acuity requirements to public school teaching, just as there were visual acuity requirements to driving a car. As a matter of fact, there were some colleges and universities in the United States that wouldn't permit a blind person to major in education. You were prohibited because they said, you know, you're not going to get a job. Now, you could take classes to teach at a residential school for the blind or in the rehab system, but not in the public school system. Well, the NFB changed those. By the way, I was not in the NFB at this time. I didn't know the NFB, but there were those anonymous people out there trying to make my life and other people's lives better, and they did for me. So I became certified I always remember the date, December 17th, 1969. I believe I was the first blind person certified to teach in a public school in Massachusetts. I don't know that for a fact, but I believe I was. Now, thank you. Now, the trick was to get a job. Okay. All kinds of letters. And by the way, back in 1969, no computers. You had to write your cover letters, resume, address the envelopes, return addresses, etc. I mean, I sent out hundreds of letters and resumes. This is not hyperbole. Hundreds. I had over 25 interviews. There were some interviews, by the way, where the principal or the administrator never even closed their door. I knew right away I wasn't getting that job. Okay, but all these rejections. This is where internship comes into hand again. I was enrolled in the Harvard Graduate School of Education, where I did my master's and my doctorate. And I was required, even though I had done my student teaching, to do an internship. Well, that internship had to be at this F.A. Day school, middle school in Newton, Massachusetts. Now, it was unpaid, okay? I loved it. I was supposed to go one day a week, and I met a group of people my age, teachers there. I went out 2-3 days a week, and I really enjoyed it. Well, it gets to be near the end of the year. I'm looking around for jobs. It's around May of the school year. The principal calls me into his office on a Friday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Now, I got to tell you, even when you're 25 years old, when the principal calls you into his or her office on a Friday afternoon at 2 o'clock, you're not thinking happy, cheery things. Okay. So, you know, and all I was thinking about were a few of my buddies after school going out and having a couple of beers, to be truthful. So, anyway, I go to the principal's office around 2 o'clock on this Friday afternoon, and we make a little small talk about the Red Sox. And he said, you know, one of our 7th grade English teachers has to leave the school, and she and her husband are moving out of the area because of a business opportunity that he has. And we have an opening to teach 7th grade English. And I've spoken with teachers, I've observed you with the students, and I like very much the way you interact with the students. And he offered me a job. And I'll tell you guys, I still get a little misty-eyed when I talk about this, because I'll never forget that. After all the rejections, all the letters, all the resumes, all the interviews, and all those rejections, here is somebody offering me a job. But again, the way that it came out is I was in the building and I was interacting and being observed. You know, there's that old saying, get a seat at the table. And, you know, by getting an internship or volunteering, get out there and be known. And not only get out there and be known in the blindness community, in some way integrate yourself into the greater community, whether it be a church, and whether it be through music, whether it be through, for me, at the gym. I mean, I just enjoy being at the gym. But for me, I made wonderful friendships and wonderful contacts, which have not only benefited me, but also benefited our Federation of the Blind and a lot of the work we do in our Cambridge chapter in Massachusetts. So I hope that's helpful, Stephen. Okay. Is that it? I want to say thank you, really. I appreciate the opportunity, and I hope I've been able to contribute, and I want to wish people the best of luck, and enjoy the week and take full advantage of the convention and the seminar. Thank you.
Thank you, David. That was just great. this is Dick. I had one thing to add to Stephanie. Stephanie, if you're going to college, there is such a thing as work study. If people ask you when you're doing financial aid, do you want work study, always say yes, because they'll give you a certain amount of money. It won't go towards your tuition. You'll be able to put it in your pocket, and they will find a job for you. You know, so never pass up work study. And even if you aren't eligible for work study, go by the work study office anyway, because when I was in graduate school, I didn't qualify for assistantships. So I worked the work study office relentlessly, and the person there came to know me. And one of the things, as long as you're nice and as long as you're persistent, sooner or later they're going to try to find a way to get rid of you. And the nicest way to get rid of you is to offer you a job. Second thing is that David was talking about logos. Here's a couple quick suggestions that you may not have thought. One of the newest things in resumes is to, if you work for a corporation, say, David, like Legal Seafood, and you're applying for another job, put their logo on your resume. Put it by their job posting. If you don't know how to do that, you know, find somebody who does. There are logo sites on the internet where you can cut and paste logos in there, and you benefit then from the trademark, you know, of the corporation. You have people like Legal Seafood, they're going to think David Tiki is a great guy because he's associated with this big image. Second thing is that print is now back in, and that's because a lot of people are sending out things. A lot of people are sending out things through email. A lot of employers have their emails set up to screen out emails. You could get screened out, but if you send them a nice-looking letter and resume through the mail, they're going to be far more likely to look at it. I never thought I'd be saying, yeah, send a print letter to somebody. It's more efficient than email, but in point of fact, it's becoming that way. Again, you want to do what everybody else isn't doing, you know, so everybody else isn't sending print letters. So now our next presenter is Dawn Turco. She's a vice president from Hadley School for the Blind. It's been in existence for many years, and it's wonderful. And although I don't know Dawn personally, she seems like a wonderful person, too. So I'll give it to Dawn.
Thank you. Thank you. Your program today goes from Tiki to Turco to Bullis, so there goes the alphabetical approach. I was relating to David not only in the truth of his presentation, but I was studying across the river from you in the early 80s at Boston College, and I can tell you that what he says about Legal Seafood, go there. I'm a fan and will be there in August when I go back to Boston. To not be confused with an old dog, I'm learning a new trick this morning, and I've decided with my new iPhone. Do you have iPhones, anybody? I'm new to it as a low vision user, so I am starting a little timer so that I don't blow my time here with you this morning. Thank you for the time on the program. Let me just ask you quickly, so I get a sense of it. Are you familiar with the Hadley School? Yeah. Okay, good. Anyone students of the Hadley School? All right, good. That's always good to hear. I'm here today to talk to you about a new program that's launching at the Hadley School, and it is the Foresight Center for Entrepreneurship, and we are quite excited about it. The Foresight Center, or I may just refer to it as the center as we go on, is a program that is launching in the fall, and the goal of the program is to provide the students with the knowledge, resources, and networking opportunities that will enable them to launch and then grow their own business. Foresight, Foresight. And I have lots of brochures here, so don't worry about notes. I have handouts. Pardon? In a moment. Okay. The Foresight Center is, as I said, going to be launched in September, actually. And it is intended, the, you know, why? Why are we doing this? And, of course, we're all familiar with the under and unemployment rates. But it's also because entrepreneurship is really a great career opportunity. Eligibility, many of you know about Hadley's eligibility. It's a program under our adult continuing education program, so there are the vision eligibility requirements, and as always with Hadley courses, 14 and older is our age group, although we're mostly adults. But for this particular center's program, we are also opening up some of its courses and modules to family members. We do have a family education program, but our thinking in this regard is that in many cases it could be families that would be starting a new business together. So in this way they can study together as well. What it's not is an intention of replacing an MBA program. What it is a specially designed program that's going to address some of the general or generic issues in business ownership, but also blindness-related questions related to running a business. So the curriculum is going to take advantage of some of our newer existing business courses, and then we're building on those courses with, we have 50, we have 50 topics that we are building modules for that are related to owning a business. And we are currently on number 7, so we have quite a road to go there. Along with these modules, which will, by the way, this whole program primarily is going to be offered online. Let's see. The modules and the course, most of the courses have no prerequisites, so you have some quick entrance into the activities. We are going to have a recommended sequence for getting started. Let me tell you a little bit about some of the courses. As long as many of them as you're going to want to take. And in some cases, what will happen, I think along the way, is some people will learn that perhaps entrepreneurship or self-employment is not necessarily for them. And that's okay, too. The newest business course that we already are teaching is a course called Self-Employment with a Minimal Investment. And indeed, this is the launching pad for the program. In addition to that business course, we offer already business fundamentals, business communications, business writing, lots of good skill building courses there. We have a business law 1 and 2, but I would say don't take that one because we have a brand new business law 1 and 2 in the making. Then you get to these modules, and this is unusual. For those of you who have been Hadley students and you're used to the course, and that's self-employment with minimal investment is what you would expect as a course. I think there are 6 lessons in that, 6 or 8. These modules are short activities. In fact, I was reading one of the modules last night on the business plan, and it's a typical length. It's a one-lesson activity. If it were in pages, since it's online, we're not as concerned with that, but it's about 50, 60 pages worth of material and a lesson. The 7 modules we've already got written and are putting online now, market research, marketing plan, financial plan, business plan, veterans benefits, business insurance, and forms of ownership. That's just the first 7 of the 50 topics we've got in mind. In fact, after listening to David, I'm going back to see if business ethics is on there because I'm very interested in that. We have technology courses that are bundled in with the center. And amongst those, using Excel, which we've had out there a little while, but we have 3 new courses that launched in January, which are of high interest to a lot of people. These relate to screen readers, and there are 3 of them. One's called Listening Skills, Formatting Word Documents, and Web Browsing. And these are designed for screen readers who know how to use their screen reader but are looking for increased efficiency and competence with them. Again, adding to your competitiveness in the marketplace. So those are relatively short courses as well. But I'm going to tell you a little bit about listening skills, for example. We have the ability in this course, we start you at about, I think, 200 words a minute. And by the end of the course, you're going to increase your speed in listening through your screen reader. And there is a scenario, for example, where a person is on the phone with the phone in one ear, and in the other ear, they're listening to the information that they need to relay to the person on the phone. So you're going to get the experience of having to do this kind of dual listening and performing on the job. So there's some good things there. Listening skills, formatting Word documents, and web browsing, again, those three screen reader courses. As far as the center is concerned, it's not just going to be about courses and those modules. We also are offering online seminars for the students in this course. Is anybody familiar with seminars at Hadley? Thank you. We're doing live seminars and have been doing online webinars since 2006. And at this point in time, we have, I think, over 90 archived topics on our website. And these go from across the board, from business-related, technology-related, independent living-related. I happen to do a lot of the cooking, and no, we don't cook online, but we talk about food. We talk about food a lot, and a lot of people enjoy talking about what we do in the kitchens. But so anyway, there's all these variety of topics that you can go and take with you and listen at your leisure. But they start out as live webinars, and the Center for Entrepreneurship is going to be having its own kind of stream of business-related topics and presenters. And again, those will get archived. And later in the year, Hadley's announcing we're looking at the podcast approach. So you don't have to think, you don't have to remember to go to the Hadley website and check it out yourself. If you sign up, you'll get a notification that there's a new topic there to listen to. So, yeah, there's lots going on at Hadley. So we have the seminars, we have the modules, we have the courses, and then we are building an online business directory of blind business owners. And again, that's the networking opportunity that will be there with this program. So I would say just check us out as we go forward. September, you'll be hearing more about the modules launching. If you think you're interested in just checking this out, you can start with self-employment with a minimal investment, and that's available now. Let's see what my iPhone is telling me. 4 minutes and 4 minutes and 51 seconds. Good. I have got to learn how to use this better. So questions related to this, or as long as you've got Hadley here, anything else Hadley related? Yes.
I have a kind of a business of mine starting right now. I was wondering, are y'all going to have a course on helping kind of business starting business owners to learn how to either get their, to sell their stuff? They have to have a license. Are y'all going to get a course to teach them how to do that?
I'm not sure if that's in the modules, but I'll tell you who you're going to ask. And as I leave the materials, the manager of the entrepreneurship venture here at Hadley is Tom Babinski. He's, in fact, running many of his own businesses. I will leave his card with you in particular, and you can, and since you're kind of into it yourself, he might be interesting in talking with you, because we've been talking with a lot of blind business owners as we build scenarios and real-life situations into these modules. So,
oh, hi. Thank you for speaking to us. I'm not sure if you keep up with all the NFB stuff, but there's a bill we were trying to get passed, and I don't know where it's at, called the Small Business Equal Opportunity Act in January. I don't know where it is or if anyone jumped on it or anything, senators, whatever. But if you could totally talk to whoever wrote this thing,
mm-hmm.
I think that your program would, like, kind of help move the bill along.
Okay.
It's so awesome, especially bad economy. People need to make their own businesses, make their own opportunities, so it's so awesome. Thank you.
Okay. Maybe Dick can pass along the name of of who we can contact to share some thoughts with on that bill. And then I'll be attending the general sessions, and maybe there'll be an update report. I expect there would be. And Stephanie, by the way, while we go to another microphone, Stephanie, there's a transitioning to college seminar on the website, so just go listen to that. Yeah. Next question.
I have a real quick question for you. In order to begin these courses, we need to register as Hadley students, correct?
Correct. And you can do that online or through the paper format or audio braille. No, by the way, thank you for asking that, because I forget not everybody's familiar. Hadley offers its programs almost in total free of charge. The only people we charge a small tuition is for some of our professional courses. But yes, these all of this that I've talked about is free of charge, not only to you, but to the family member as well. That's the Foresight name. We do go for funding, folks. It does cost to do these things, but we are actively fundraising for this center.
Next question.
We're going to be another 2 years developing modules. So after those first ones, because basically anybody interested in their own business, the ones that I read out loud, you're going to want to take those modules. Then you're going to have the opportunity to pick and choose amongst the remaining ones. You know, outside of the veterans, if you're not a veteran, obviously you're not going to take that module. But then it's going to be up to you to pick and choose. By the time you've completed the marketing plan, which is the one I was just looking at last night, there, as a part of the assignment that you do, you're going to be developing the beginnings of your own business plan. And, excuse me, the business plan is what I was reading. And so that's going to get you started. And, you know, it's not for everyone. And I think after you take these first couple, you're going to kind of sort that out. Or else you're going to get really jazzed about it. And you're going to have your idea. You're going to have your business in mind. And you're going to start to put it down, because thinking about it is one thing. You can't keep it in your head. To really get it sorted out, you have to write it down. And so this is going to get you started on that. And then, as I said, hopefully with the networking group that we'll put together, you'll be able to brainstorm a little bit further.
Employment question?
Yes.
In order to instruct for Hadley, what are the qualifications?
The qualifications for teaching for Hadley depends on the course content. We're fortunate that we have a lot of full-time, but we also have a lot of part-time teachers with the expertise we're looking for. We are an accredited school. In fact, we have two accreditations. So anybody teaching courses that lead to our high school diploma have to have certain teaching credentials for us to satisfy that accreditation. For some of the other courses, we take related degrees, and that could be in rehab. It could be in teaching. It could be in business ownership, for example, now that we're into this new program. So it's when people call me and say, I want to teach for Hadley, generally I tell them to craft a letter to me. And it can be an email. It doesn't have to be hard copy in this case. Having looked through the Hadley course catalog, what is it that you feel you are skilled enough to teach for us, and then also to attach the resume? Sometimes, of course, our teaching opportunities come up at relatively short notice. Other times we go a long time without needing to hire anybody because we have a lot of seasoned teachers with us. So,
Miss Donna, now I know I'm looking at your name here on my paper.
Uh-huh.
Do you have an email that if we have more questions about your courses, we would like to ask you specifically, we could email you out with Hadley?
You can, and it's real simple. Since I'm the only Dawn at Hadley, you can use dawn@hadley.edu.
Okay.
And I'll also be doing the exhibit booth here, so if you want to come by and discuss further, I can also hand you my own business card there. Mr. Bullis is a very a good friend of Hadley's. So there are Tom Babinski's. Here are print and braille brochures. If we happen to run out in here, come to the booth. I have more. There's another hand, and I think I have about 1 second left before Mike goes on.
My name is Rick Fox from New Jersey, and my question is, the information that you're handing out, is it available on the Hadley site?
The Foresight Center brochure is on the Hadley site, and as we launch the program, the Foresight Center will have its own portal on our website, so there'll be lots and lots of information there. Okay?
Don, yes. I have a question about back to the qualifications. Let's say if someone has an MBA degree, mm-hmm. could they teach some of the business courses, or do they have to have a specific degree in teaching that?
As I said, I would go ahead and contact the school, okay. And we like to be aware of potential instructors out there so that when we need, we know where to go and look.
Okay.
So feel free to do that.
Thanks. I know someone with an MBA.
Very good. Very good. Yes.
What I was wondering is, are your courses available to Canadians?
Ah, excellent. Eh? Yes. the Hadley programs have been and are available to Canadians across all of our programs. In fact, we have a core of CNIB Hadley ambassadors working for us in Canada, letting people know about Hadley's programs. So we just ended a fiscal year, and last year we had over 700 Canadians studying with us. So, yes. We are Canadian friendly. In fact, for those of you who don't know, Hadley courses go worldwide. So we do have a number of students. I think last time I looked, from 130 countries are studying with us. So that's one of the cool things about distance education. You don't have to come to us. We come to you.
Okay. Yep.
Okay, I'm going to hand the microphone. Thank you, everyone, for your questions. And.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Don. You're quite the rock star. You know, if people want to ask questions of Don, I'm sure she'll be available outside the room for a while. I'm sure you will want to go down and talk to her at the Hadley booth. there are many, many things that Hadley has available. One thing that Don didn't mention, or at least I didn't hear her mention, is that in the seminars at Hadley, there is really a nice seminar that Richard Bowles, who is the author of What Color Is Your Parachute, did with Chuck Young, who is the president of Hadley, and it's really great. You can download it onto your computer and listen to it, you know, so I would encourage you to go into seminars with Hadley there. And Don, don't you guys also have a job seeking course? Yeah, job seeking.
We have a course called Finding Employment, and it talks about the issues related to being a blind person finding employment, which a lot of other types of courses like that don't. So it's very specific to us. So excellent.
Okay. Well. Thank you. Dawn, I'm sure, will be sort of lurking in the back of the room or outside. If you want to talk to her, please do so quietly, because we have our next presenter here, Mike Bullis, who another person who's known me for years, another person I've known for years. He is has done a number of functions, you know, over the years, and one of the things that he's doing right now is executive director of the Image Center for People with Disabilities in Towson, Maryland. And he's one of the real experts on the employment of blind people. So, Mike, here you go.
Thank you, sir. All right. Thank you all very much. By the way, this microphone or the speaker system or something, some part of it's just terrible. And if I sound muffled back there, it's not my fault. It's Dick's problem. No, just kidding. All right. Thank you. I'm going to try and let it carry because I know they're trying to record, so I will use the mic, but I don't need it. I am pleased to be here. I can guarantee you I won't go over time because my daughter, Juliana, is back there and she says we need to get back to Disney World, Daddy. So like get with it. We had a ball over there yesterday. It is so wonderful to be in a place where our wishes come true and dreams come true. And it really touches your heart to think about that as you go through Disney. There's a real passion that Disney had for understanding the heart of people, and a couple times brought me to tears yesterday. So please take the opportunity to go over there if you get a chance. I wish some things for you. I wish for you to be a person with passion and a person of compassion, a person who is thoughtful about others and a person who's a thinker, somebody who takes the time to really think about things. I hope you're a truth teller. I really do. I hope you're a truth teller, and I hope you're true to your own principles, too, because as we were talking earlier, the issue of integrity is really important. However, I have to disagree a bit with David Tiki when I say that there is one profession where if you have a good, strong work ethic and good people skills and no integrity, you can get in. It's called politics, so don't feel like there isn't a place for you. And I wish for you that you would use the fact that your blindness causes you to stand out and use it to positive advantage. Don't keep trying to act normal, look normal. You ain't. Get over it. Move on. Okay? Stand up, stand out. And I hope you go through life and understand that in the world there are winners and there are losers. Contrary to what modern education is trying to teach, where everybody's a winner and we all get a sticker. It's all nonsense. There are winners and there are losers, and you want to be a winner, okay? You simply do not want to lose. And I wish for you a sense of urgency. What do I mean by that? I guess I talk to a lot of folks who are on SSI or SSDI, and they can just barely get by, so they lose that sense of urgency. I got my bills paid. I can kind of make it. I wish for you the fact that if you don't get a job by the end of the month, you're going to lose your house. You know why? Because you'll get one. You'll find a way. That's what a sense of urgency gets you. And sometimes having that safety net takes away that sense of urgency. Okay? I wish for you a mentor. I really wish for you somebody who comes to you that you can go to and say, how am I doing? What lies am I telling to myself this month? Okay? And we all do it. But please go get a mentor in employment. I have offered and I continually offer to people. Anytime you want help getting jobs, and by the way, I'm not even going to talk about my resume today, but I've got skills. I've got the ability to get jobs and help people get jobs. I wish for you the ability to get a job and keep a job, and I wish for you somebody to tell you the truth when you're basically lying to people, okay? Now, here's what I mean by that. You are not looking for work if the last time you had a job interview was 2.5 months ago. I don't know what you're doing, but you're not looking for work, okay? You are not looking for work if what you spend most of your time doing is filling out those stupid resumes online. Go find me somebody that ever got a job doing that. There is so little job outcome from things like Ladders and from Monster and all those stupid job sites, they won't even tell you what their percentage is, and if they do tell you, they're lying. Tens and hundreds of thousands of resumes go in, and almost nothing comes out, ladies and gentlemen. The only thing you're doing is helping corporate America advertise. That is not what you want to do. Very few jobs ever come from those places. You need to be talking to real people about real things that are going on in your career, in your profession, finding out, meeting people, getting to know things and people. And you know what will happen along the way? You'll find a job. It's amazing how that works. Okay? Be active. Stop waiting for the perfect time. Okay, you know what I mean by this? Oh, God, I can't go Monday morning. No. Employers are really tired of Monday morning. I don't want to try to talk to anybody Monday morning. Oh, Monday afternoon. Well, he's probably really busy now, so I better not call today. Let's see, Fridays. Oh, no. Everybody's thinking about the weekend. I can't go talk to anybody on a Friday. That's a bad time. There's just the right moment. Just seems like it never, ever comes along, right? Oh, no, it's too early in the day. If I call too early, he hasn't had his coffee yet, or she hasn't had her coffee yet. I can't do it. Oh, no, now it's too late in the day. She wants to go home. I can't call now. You know, all you got to do, folks, is you got to make something happen. you aren't looking for your work if all you're doing is finding ways to avoid what you know you hate to do the most, and that is put yourself in front of somebody else. Yes, you're on the line. Yes, I know it's painful. I know it hurts. Got to do it anyway. Okay? I'm sorry. I can't fix that part of it. Be in a hurry. You know what the best cure for a bad job interview is? Another one. Go out and do another interview. Meet somebody. Make something happen. Don't sit and wallow in the fact that, oh, I didn't know how to answer the technology question, right? I just feel so bad. I'm going to have to take 3 weeks now and sort of whine and cry about that. Go get another one. Go talk to somebody, okay? Your mentor will tell you if you're just saying stupid stuff over and over again, okay? You just need to keep saying it. Go talk to people. The importance of more. More, more, more. I want to do more people, more interviews. I want to meet more people. I want to get to know more companies. I want to know more about my field. More is really important, okay? I do this thing called writing an article. And I call people up in professions that I want to get involved in, and I say, you know what? I'm writing an article about blank. Can I ask you a few questions? I've never had anybody say, no, you can't talk to me. You go home. Get out of here. And then I like to call up even like really famous people and say, I'm writing about you and your situation. Can we have a few minutes to talk? Yes, you can talk to almost anybody, folks. They will actually respond to you if you'll call up with some intelligent questions, all right? Use it because it helps you get to know the people in your profession. And how do you get to know some of them? Look and see who's writing articles about your profession and call them up and say, hey, I saw recently that you interviewed people and wrote an article about blank. Can I talk to you for a few minutes about it? Sure, they can. And when you say, and at the end, you say to them, who in this article that you wrote impressed you the most, and who should I speak with? And they give you a couple names. Okay, so now you call up the next guy, and you say, hey, I was just speaking with the writer so-and-so, and he told me that you'd be an excellent person to speak with. What do you think they're going to say to you? No, get off the phone. I don't want to talk to you. No, they're not going to say that. They're going to say, of course, I'd be glad to talk to you. Right? Talk to the people who hire. That's usually not HR. Just a little secret there. HR doesn't hire, folks. Stop talking to those people. They waste your time. Go talk to the supervisors and managers in the field where you want to work. Get to know them. And along the way, one of them is going to say, you know what? We need somebody over here and da-da-da. You look like the perfect person. Can we talk to you about that? Well, okay, I guess so. If you want me to go to work and make money, all right, whatever. I can handle that. I can do it. Okay? 30% of people get their jobs through sending out resumes to people they don't know and companies they don't know anything about. 70% of people get jobs talking to people in the field they're in and through networking. I just think you ought to spend 70% of your time on the 70% that does some good. I don't send, for any reason, a resume to an organization I don't know and that I don't know anybody there. I feel like that would just be like admitting my mediocrity, okay? Just don't go there. There are, oh, and I want to talk to you about the recession for a minute. Yes, I'm jumping all over the place, but there are, even at the height of the recession in 2009, I looked at the figures and there were how many jobs turning over every month? 5 million jobs turning over every month, okay? Because people were still moving, people were still getting married, people were still getting divorced, people were still having a job in a new city, people were still deciding they wanted to retire. 5 million jobs were turning over every month, and a lot of my friends were saying, I just can't get a job because nobody's hiring. Yes, they are. They're hiring all the time. They're just not hiring you because you're so down and out and gloomy and grumpy. Stop being gloomy and grumpy and move on. Okay, so Research. I'm going to tell you two quick stories. I left two positions in the last couple of years I opened up to hire. An office manager of an organization I worked with that has a website and has all kinds of information. Every newsletter we ever wrote is on the website. Oh, it would just bore you to tears, all the stuff we tell everybody. How many people out of the 9 finalists that we interviewed knew anything about our organization and what it did? 1. That's not only criminal, it's stupid, it's embarrassing. I'd like to have embarrassed the people with it, but it was a state agency, and you can't embarrass the public because they do pay your taxes. Okay, so be nice and move on. But come on, folks. Research the people and places you want to go to work for. Get to know them. Find out who they are on LinkedIn. Find out who they link to. Get to know the people they know. don't just walk in. You don't even know if you want to work for them. You know the worst answer I hear sometimes? What kind of work are you looking for?
Anything.
No! Stop that! You're not looking for anything. I can name a lot of jobs you don't want. Okay? And I'll tell you something else. I left the job a few months ago as the executive director of a technology program. Went to work somewhere else. And they just finally filled that position last Friday. Took them six months. Of all the people they interviewed, how many of those people called me up? They interviewed 11 people, I believe. How many of those people called me up to say, what was the job like? What was the working environment like? What do you see as the goals of the program? What do you see about things that could happen or not happen? How many, folks? One guy. I wanted to kiss the guy, only he was a guy, and I don't kiss guys, okay? But he was. But he was one of the rest of those idiots who, and he didn't get hired, by the way. You know, just because you do the right thing doesn't mean it's going to work every time. But I will tell you this, none of the rest of those people were even that smart to call me up. I was public information, I was available, somebody could have called me, all right? Word about technology. I learned a great experience with technology. Many, many years ago, I was talking to the CEO of this company, and we were eating lunch, and he was talking to me about some of the management issues he had, and I was talking to him about how we might be able to figure out solutions to that. He said, oh, my God, we need to get you on board and work with that. Now, I had seen this guy earlier that morning in his office, and his secretary was saying, no, Mr. Smith, you don't have to put in the to part when you're sending an email, the from part. They know who it's from. You just write in the to, who you want to send it to. And he's like, oh, okay. So all of a sudden, he pauses during lunch and says to me, oh, God, I don't think we can hire you. I don't know. How would we handle that technology thing? And I'm thinking, you can't handle your own technology thing. What are you worried about mine for? But I couldn't say it to him. So what I said was, Bob, I said, what's your IT director's name? He told me what it was, and I just whipped out my Braille note. I wrote down, I said, what's his phone number? I don't want this guy to stop and think. I wrote down the phone number. I said, don't worry, I'll handle it. And I waved it away, and we moved on. That's all, folks. You need to be in charge of it. You need to take charge of it. You need to be in control. If you're not, and you expect your employer to know anything about blindness technology, if you expect them to fix anything about blindness technology, it won't happen. And I can tell you, I hear horror stories every day about people who lose jobs because the whole system falls apart when it comes to trying to deal with our technology. We need to know as much or more as anybody else does. And sometimes, ladies and gentlemen, even that's not going to be enough. I think we actually lose jobs a lot of times because of technology. All right. Whatever you use, I don't care whether it's Braille or print or large print or dog feet tracks on paper, whatever it is. I don't care what your systems are. What they need to result in is competence. Okay? If you're holding your paper an inch away from your face and going, the term is, that's not competence, that's flakery. Quit it. You need to get speedy at whatever you're going to use, folks. I don't care how you do it. And if your Braille skills are slow, get a tape player, get a digital recorder, get something, get a series of something or others that make it work for you, okay? Because that's what it's all about. Don't ever let anybody take you to a job interview, okay? Except a taxi, because rich people use taxis. If you want, but don't ever let anybody take you or drop you off, and don't ever let anybody pick you up, because I don't care what happens in that interview. It's what they see that counts, and if you walk out and get in your mom's car, if you walk out and get in a friend's car, they think, oh, isn't that special? Yeah, isn't that special? She had somebody bring her to the interview. Aw. You think they're going to hire you? No, it won't happen. I'm sorry. I wish it would, but it isn't going to. All right, folks? That's it for me. I have told you from my heart and my guts what I wish for you. I want you all to get jobs. It takes energy. It takes effort. It takes a lot of painful ability to confront yourself and confront what you have to get done. You can do it, but you know what? It's your life that's in the balance, because there needs to be a sense of urgency. I'll tell you what happens. 1 year leads to two. 2 years leads to three. And 3 years leads to five. And pretty soon, you're an out-of-work, unemployed person for your life. That we do not want, and that we do not need. There are enough blind people who have proven that it can be done, that it is worth doing, that you are capable of doing it, that you don't need to have it proven again. You just need to get with the people who can help you do it yourself. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right, questions.
All right. Excuse me just a second. Is that, is this mic on? No, you can.
Oh, okay.
You can keep,
all right.
You're good? Okay. If you want to ask a question, please stand up so I know.
What is your contact information?
Bullis.Michael. That's bullis.michael@gmail.com. What'd you say about pizza? Oh, please repeat that. I'm sorry. Bullis, B-U-L-L-I-S dot Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L at gmail.com. Please feel free to call me, write me. I love to work with people. I love to talk to people. I love to see people win, folks. It is so much fun. Any other questions?
When I met Mr.
Don't you tell her anything I said back there.
Heard a horror story from about technology and having lost a job. So my question to you is this. For anyone, and I have done this, who has gone into a job situation where an employer said, oh, don't worry about it, we'll start training you, and a month later I didn't have any equipment.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything, and I was working with all the right people.
It's very difficult.
What is the best strategy besides the one I didn't use
arriving
at that point?
I wish I had, as many of you know, my partner in life, Connie Taylor, passed away a few months ago of a heart attack. And a month after she passed away, her employer and I were talking, and her employer said, you aren't going to believe that technology we were working on, the work order finally came through. And I said, yeah, that's about right. She had to die before it would happen. But look, there aren't a lot of easy solutions. You have to get to know the IT people. I feel about IT people like I do about maintenance, okay? I always get to know the maintenance people in the building. I always get to know the IT people. They can do a lot more than they have to do. They can do more if they want to help you. I usually, if the company isn't too big, I try and talk them into giving me admin privileges, because about the fifth time I tell them he need to reinstall an update of some kind or another, they're like, oh, for God's sakes, you know more about this than we do. We'll just give you admin privileges, or at least even limited admin. Go out and find the solutions yourself. And work with the people. None of this is ideal, okay? Because ultimately what ends up screwing it up in some larger organizations is just the plain bureaucracy of it. And I'll tell you the other thing that screws it up. Who's going to pay for it? Because if your tiny little department has to pay for it, your employees may love you a lot, but they might resent the fact that they didn't get their extra money this year because it all went to you. So I strongly recommend to companies when I work with them, set up a separate fund for reasonable accommodation. Don't expect little departments to pay for it, or they're going to hate the blind person or the other person with disabilities in that organization. So get it out of there. But there aren't a lot of simple solutions, except you need to be as absolutely knowledgeable as possible, and don't assume that you can't figure it out, because you know what? Those IT guys aren't that smart. Yes, hang on.
I don't have a question, sure. But I want to thank you for giving me the confidence and just some guidance of just being here.
We didn't talk about informational interviewing, but I'd be glad to work with you on how to go out and ask those four or five questions and who to talk to, so that you can build this network of people who know you and then become to like and respect you. And so when they see a job, they're going to go like, what's your name, Christy? Krista?
Yeah. Stephanie.
And so then they're going to go, you know what, we ought to hire Stephanie to do that. I believe in volunteering, by the way, folks. I've gotten a couple of my jobs, and my career started out by volunteering. I think I can demonstrate my worth without a paycheck. I just think if people are around me for a while, they'll go, you know, we need to fire him or hire him, which is it going to be? So.
Hi, Mr. Bullis.
Hi.
Nice to see you again. You were on the scholarship committee last year, I believe.
Nope.
Oh, well, I met you anyway.
Thank you. All right.
Yeah.
I'd like to be, though.
No, I forgot my question.
All right.
What would you recommend to someone who is considering getting a job in another state?
Well, again, distance isn't so important as it used to be. You need to use the telephone a lot. Find out what's going on in that state. What kind of job is really important? And you know, if you say dishwasher to me, then I say, well, you know, we can work that out 100 ways. If you say psychologist in a small counseling firm, that's a whole different issue. So what kind of job really depends on how you sort of figure the market out in that other state. But I will say this, as somebody who moved from Oregon to Baltimore 10 years ago, it takes time to build those personal connections. It takes time to go out and and become, help people become aware of you at a local level. So give it some time, because we really haven't sort of bridged the distance gap just because we have the internet now.
What you said earlier, that the employers, if you're trying to get to an interview, really judge you by showing up, so you shouldn't get a friend. What if you live in a really rural area where your only real transportation is either paying your life savings or getting a ride with a friend?
Well, whatever. I'll say, have them drop you off a couple blocks away. What I do sometimes, I always go to interviews ahead of time. So I'll stop by. If my interview's on a Tuesday, I'll stop by there on a Saturday, check out the area for a couple blocks around so that I can walk to the building with confidence. I may not know everything about the building once I get inside, but I always think that walking to the building, walking away from it with confidence is important. So get your friend to drop you a couple blocks away, and when you're doing that reconnaissance, and then go there, okay? That's all I can suggest. All I can say is visuals are a huge part of what we get. And if somebody's dropping you off and picking you up, it sends a message that I don't choose to want to send, because we have enough sort of negatives that go with it, okay? You understand that every time you allow another negative to add into the process, you just diminish your opportunity. A lot of people want and would you know, they say all the right words. Oh, I think blind people are normal, and I think they can do lots of things. He said, please don't. Let me tell you truth for you there. Now, be careful. Don't take a step. You're going to fall down. So people want to say all the right things. What they don't want to, they don't understand how to do is do the right things. And sometimes the example of us being taken somewhere by somebody is just the example they need to say, yeah, I kind of figured the person really wasn't competent and capable on their own.
Okay. Mike, it's, I don't know, the mic is working.
It's
Brian Bashan.
Hey, how are you, Brian?
I'm good.
Good.
A lot of folks find employment through their VR system.
Yeah.
Sometime in our experience, that actually slows things down.
Oh, by a ton.
Do you want to talk a bit about managing your VR counselor and the system to get what you want?
Yeah, absolutely. I used to direct my VR counselors when I had one about exactly what I needed. You'll have agencies or organizations you want to go to work for, by the way, and there'll be a temptation for you to say, well, yeah, we can get in touch with VR. Don't ever let that word come out of your mouth. You say, let me get in touch with the people who can help us facilitate this. Don't ever turn your relationship with your employer over to VR, because I can guarantee you between the two bureaucracies, you'll never see that job. You need to understand enough. We could talk about the care and feeding of VR counselors. You need to understand enough about the VR system to know what your rights are, the things you're going to need for your job, how to get them and how to get them quickly and effectively. You need to know if your VR counselor says, no, you can't have that. You need to say, oh, I know you're under a lot of financial pressure from your boss to keep your budget down, so I need to appeal this case immediately because I'm in a hurry. Be in a hurry, folks. Don't ever let state and federal bureaucracies, well, federal is a different matter, but state bureaucracies slow you down, okay? You've got to take charge of this. This is your life, okay? So the worst thing, and by the way, I take a hard line on the other stuff too. I don't ever let employers say they'll call me back. Did you ever get tired of sitting by the phone going, oh God, the guy said he was going to call today, it's Monday, and he hasn't called? No, you say, you know what? We've had some terrible problems with my phone system lately. I'd love to have you call me, but I'll tell you what, I'll call you on Monday. Now whose hand is this in? It's in my hand, okay? And yes, I lied. Big deal. Move on. Next. Look, this is my life we're talking about. This is not some game. I understand that when it's my job, that the situation for the employer is he's got, 20 things to do, and I'm just one of them, okay? It's not important to him whether I get a job. He knows he's got a paycheck, right? But it's important to me, so I take the wheel whenever I possibly can. I take control of the situation. I say, you know what? Our phone has been doing horrible things. And then when I get home that night, just to make sure it's not a lie, I pick the phone up and drop it a couple times. And, maybe it won't work quite as well as it used to, okay? There's just tons of things. We probably ought to do a whole seminar on the issue of how to manage the VR system and how to know what you can and can't get at various points and how you want to be prepared for that. But mostly, you deal with your VR counselor. You deal with the employer. You are the interface. Don't ever let it get the other way around.
We can take more questions. This is Dick. One of the things I do actually do seminars on these, so maybe I should do one of those sometime. But there are sometimes rehab agencies talk about comparable services and benefits. Well, if you want technology, you go here, you go there, and so on and so forth. That's not what the federal law says. Assistive technology is the responsibility of the rehab agency. So make sure they know that you know that. And above all, don't let them pull this, well, when you get a job, we'll get you the technology, because not going to work really well. You know, tell them, hey, you know, you better get it from me in advance because I better learn how to use it really well. Otherwise, I'm going to crash and burn on my job. Plus, you don't want to be sitting there for 3 months waiting for your job to start because the agency has to buy you technology and then train you on how to do it.
And it does take months for a state agency to order something to make sure it's the right thing and then get it to you. It takes 3, 4, 5 months. You need to have that in your hand when you, frankly, you need to have the portable technology you're going to use when you go do these interviews. People love the fact that we have these gadgets, especially if we're good at them. If you whip out your Braille note, take a couple notes, put it away, and don't even blink an eye over it, the guy's like, whoa, I'm not sure I could have got my note out of my pocket and done anything that quick, right? You need to impress people occasionally. Why not? Look, they have enough that they look at and go, oh, God, I don't know if the person walking with a cane, whether that's going to be very efficient or not. So when you get a chance to impress them, do it.
I have a question.
Anybody else? Yeah.
Yes, I have a question. You said talk to your counselor if you need items like a computer.
Yeah.
But well, in doing so...
No, he didn't say that. He said assistive technology.
Well...
That's okay. Different.
All right. But what...
Let me explain. I think this is a distinction some people miss. If you, in your employment situation, you need a computer... That, in all likelihood, is your employer's responsibility because they give every other employee a computer, okay? So they're probably going to give you one. If you need assistive technology for the computer, like JAWS or like a scanner or Kurzweil 1000 or some other devices, that is assistive technology, and the VR agency is responsible for that. Does that help? That's the difference. That's sort of the, and by the way, sometimes you can get VR to do both, and they ought to do both, especially if it's going to take you a while to integrate those systems. And I've been successful at fighting with some agencies over that issue and just saying, look, it's stupid. Let's just put this guy a system together so that when the, especially if he's a contractor or if he's somebody who's not looking for a full-time job with a single company, you want to be sort of what this would date me a lot, but have gun, will travel. You want to be a person who goes to a job fully equipped with all the tools of the trade that you need. I carry a laptop that has everything I need. I walk in the door, I sit down and do my job. Boom. That's it. But I'm not looking to be somebody's employee for the most part. They pay me more if I'm not. So. All right. What else?
I have another question.
Sure.
Just to make sure, I just want to, like, I don't want to cross the boundary of, like, compromise and toleration. Like, some counselors will really pull your leg and say, oh, it's expensive, we can't afford it. They would, like, I mean, I really need a CCTV, and I never got a CCTV.
Uh-huh.
I need it for college, and I need it for a job, and they always made stupid excuses not to give it to me, and I never
okay.
got
Okay. All right, so let's talk about it for a minute. The first thing, let's forget VR for just a second. One, you need to make absolutely certain that that use of the CCTV is going to create in you a competent skill level. Okay, what do I mean by that? If you intend to use it a lot, you ought to make sure that you can read for several hours with it without a lot of eye strain. You ought to make sure that you can read it 200 to 300 words a minute with it so you're competently reading along with sighted people. But stepping all aside with all that stuff, then what you need to do is you need to say to the VR agency, this is a necessity for me. In order for me to be competent, I have to have this particular machine and I have to have this device. And the issue of money is not the relevant question here. The issue is, do you need it, okay? What sometimes people say to their VR counselor, and this is where the VR agency gets off the hook, is they say, you know, I really want a Braille note. Well, if you just want a Braille note, I probably won't get you one. Okay? If you need to have a Braille note and you can make the case for me about why that Braille note is essential to you in order to complete your VR plan, then I can think of cases where you might be able to take me to an appeal and win and all kinds of dastardly deeds come up and you're going to complicate my life, so I'll probably give it to you. Okay? You have to make the case for need and make that essential case. And then let them refuse you. And if they refuse you, then appeal it. Become a little bit annoying at that point and say, you know what, this isn't just something I wanted. It's something I need, so move on to the next step. And do it politely and kindly but firmly.
Hang on a second.
Sure.
If you want to talk, please stand up and I'll bring you the thing. One thing I wanted to just to add to that, Mike, being an old rehab counselor
yep.
myself, is the service has got to be in your plan. It's got to be in your IDE.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah.
So, and you can, there are such things as amendments to IPEs. It's a piece of paper. You can go and get that piece of paper from your agency and write down that you need a computer for your job in it, and you sign it and you turn it in, and then they have to either sign off on it, which would be recommended, or they have to deny it, at which point you can immediately appeal that. But a lot of people ask for things that are not in their plan or related to their plan, and that's what gets you shot down. There's a lady here who has a...
Yes, I am actually a VR counselor here with Division of Blind Services in Orlando.
Uh-huh.
And going back to the transportation thing with the jobs, a lot of clients that are visually impaired that aren't working are on fixed income.
Yep.
And they can't afford taxis or cabs. And paratransit and the bus system, at least here in Florida, is not very reliable to get them to the interview. So they would, I mean, they don't have any other choice but to have, whether it be an employment specialist or a friend or family member, to bring them, not necessarily walk them into the interview, but at least drop them off, because we can't drive. I mean, you know.
You know what? Let me just say this. Everybody has to make their own call every day about how assertively independent they want to maintain. I can tell you that I've gotten up for 9 o'clock at 5 o'clock.
I've gotten up at nine for a 9 o'clock interview. I've gotten up at 5 and hit the road to take 2 or 3 different buses to get there by 8:15 because I knew damn well the buses weren't reliable enough to get me there by 9. So, you know, it's just me. It's who I am. I value highly the impression I leave. And not only that, I think I just make a different impression. When I walk through that door, having gotten myself there, even if it took me 3.5 hours, I make a different impression than I might had I had the VR agency placement person bring me over. And frankly, I would never tell an employer I did that. But you acknowledge that.
But how would they know? I mean,
exactly. And I agree with that.
They could park the car, just
right.
Like if you were to, if
it's
someone
fine.
Were to drive,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
They could park the car, and then the person could just walk into the building.
And again, if I had the VR agency offering to do that, I'd say, fine, let's go out there on Friday. My interview appointment's on Tuesday. So let's go out there on Friday. I want to sort of scope out the neighborhood 2 or 3 blocks around. And then if you want to go with me on Tuesday, you can drop me off a couple blocks away, and I'll come back and meet you there. It's a matter of style. I guess the only argument I can make for all of the things that I said, I've been remarkably successful, folks. I've had more jobs than I could ever put on a resume. And I'm not proud of that in all cases, but all I can say is that impression counts. And that your own capacity to be a stand-up, independent person, and not use the words "I can't," you know, "I can't get this," "I can't do that," "I can't do." If you can't do the damn job, don't do it. Just go home. But if you can do it, then find ways to make it happen. Find ways to make sure you show up on time. I learned early in my career one time, I got to a job when it was a horrible snowy day and there was ice everywhere, and I came in at 6:30 and started to work, and people were like, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "What do you mean?" They said, "Well, half the plant isn't in today." And I said, "Well, that's just the way I am." And you know what? I could take the day off in the summer and tell them I was sick after that and go fishing. And the reason I could do it is because they're like, "Look, if he made it in February, he's got to be deathly sick not to be here in July." So,
good point. And Mike, I don't know if you've seen this happen before, but I have. Do not have your mom take you to the interview.
Absolutely
that is
not.
The kiss of death.
Yes.
Another question here.
All right.
In terms of VR, if you do run into a problem and you are not able to resolve it, there's a federally funded organization with offices in every state. It's called
Client Assistance Program.
Law.
Well, okay. So there, but first, look, wait a minute. There's first the Client Assistance Program, which is another federally funded agency that handles anything VR related. And very often the disability law centers in most of the 50 states are the P&A, the Protection and Advocacy Agency, and they're the Client Assistance Program. But what you're looking for is look on your VR paperwork that you filled out, and there's going to be a thing on there that says, if you have a problem you can't resolve with our agency, you are free to contact the Client Assistance Program. Call them up. They're useful. I worked for a CAP for many years. They're great programs. Use them to get your problem solved. Sorry to interrupt you, but I wanted to get to the cut of that one. I'm talking really fast, right? All right, what else, folks?
Okay. I'm fairly young, so I haven't gotten to do a whole lot of jobs. Most of them are volunteer.
Yep.
Is that going to help or hurt when I go to a potential employer and say, can I get a job with you guys?
Well, first of all, when I write my resume, I've had a couple of volunteer positions, and the only times I ever used them on the resume, I never put on there that they were volunteer. My experience is experience, folks. Why would you tell somebody this is a volunteer job? In fact, I know a guy recently who lost the opportunity to get a job. The company called me up and said, well, God, we didn't realize he'd volunteered for these positions. And I said, how'd you find that out? They said, well, he put it on his resume. And I thought, oh, good Lord. So, look, no, volunteering always helps you. It very often helps you to volunteer to get a job at the organization you're volunteering with. But if it doesn't get you that, then at least it gets some time on your resume. Here's another one for you. I don't know where people come up with this. From September to November 2009, I worked at such and such, and then from November to February 3rd, stop it. If in 2009 you worked for one place and it was only for 2 months, you put in there, 2009. Worked for a company. 2010 to 2011. I was off work for a year one time, and what I did was I put down on the resume such and so to present, and then, or then the job before that, it was 1997 to 1998, okay? Because I left the job in January 1998. So for the rest of 1998, technically I was still employed. Look, employers do not want to know the month and day that you did anything, folks. Do you use to your advantage what you can? All right, one last question.
Hi, you were just talking about the resume?
Yes.
Like the reason for leaving, what do you write?
I don't ever put in reasons for leaving. There's no place on your resume that says reason for leaving.
I guess it does. Reason for leaving.
That's, you're talking about an employment application.
Yes.
That's not in a resume. Okay.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It depends on why I left. If I left because I was going to make a million more at some other place, I put on there, you know, and made a million more elsewhere, or needed a career, left for career advancement, left for...
Okay, like don't, right next to it, like before that, the application says where did you work and what year, and you just explained it.
I was talking about the resume. I'm not talking about those annoying applications where it says month and year begins, month and year ends. Those things you have to be scrupulously honest about if you're filling them out. I prefer just to go in and meet with the managers and let them decide to hire me and then later fill that nonsense out.
My whole side is personal, personal, personal. It's because I travel back and, you know, live in different states.
Yep. Oh, I understand. And again, that's why what you want to do is before you end up filling out all that nonsense, you want to build a relationship with somebody in that agency, go talk to them, get an idea that they actually have a job available, call the person who used to have the job, get the feeling that they want you for the job. By the time they get around to filling out all this silly paperwork, they ought to be thinking, we've already decided to hire her. Look, I could tell you there are some things about my career that if people looked at, they'd shake their head. But you know what? It doesn't make any difference because by the time they've decided to hire me, that decision is over. They don't care about all that. They just want to get the paperwork filled out. Well, there you go. Yeah, thank you. Good point. All right, thank you all very much.
Okay, now I can't. Thank you. I can't speak for my friend Mr. Bullis here, but if people want to ask you questions, is it okay if they step out of the room? Okay, so if you have pressing questions, please step outside. Please stay away from the door, though, so it doesn't interrupt people in here. And in terms of the application question, I just wanted to add, if the answer is move to another state, just put in move to another state. If you were fired, put laid off. That's a lot better than putting in fired. Put in whatever it needs. Sometimes people put in, we'll discuss it, interview. I wouldn't do that because it acts like you're, you know, concealing something. So put in the best that you can. These are employers. They understand that people leave jobs. You know, they've done it themselves. So please be careful not to be too defensive about it. Okay, moving on here, we have a gentleman who is going to speak next. His name is George Wurzel. He's going to talk about off your duff, good-paying, physical, fun jobs blind people can do. And while he's wending his way up here, I'll have to say that George Wurtzel, in my opinion, is a genius. He can't write a literate sentence, but he's a genius, you know, in every other single way. And my point in saying that is that there's many, many different kinds of intelligence. And we assume in our society, because everybody is in, you know, education, and education's run by academicians, that, you know, if you dot, you know, your I's and cross all your T's beautifully, that somehow you're going to be employable. But there's a whole other kind of intelligence, and that's the intelligence of thinking on your feet, working with your fingers, being creative, being skilled, and so on and so forth. And I think a lot of times our educational systems overlook that. And that's why I'm really pleased that George is here. As I say, he's a brilliant guy. He's done many, many things in his lifetime, and he's going to open up, you know, a whole new world of jobs, hopefully, to you. So, George.
I work with Dick at Blind Incorporated up in Minnesota, just a small airplane ride from here. One of the things that I can tell you about being employed is, if you want to be employed, you can be. I like many of the other people who've been up here, and Dick as well, I absolutely do not believe that if you want a job, you can't have a job. There are many jobs out there. You have to be willing to go where the job is and do what the person needs to be done. That's the big thing. State of North Dakota just has a thing right now. They're begging for people to move to North Dakota. The unemployment rate in North Dakota, 3.1%. 17,000 jobs posted right now with their North Dakota Employment Services Commission right now, unfilled. So if you're looking for a job, you know, there may be a spot to look if you're looking for a job. I started off my employment at a very, very young age, baling hay, and I'm not sure if that was child labor laws may not have affected because they were related to me. But I think the employment process went something like this. You're baling hay today. So, you know, that's, and contrary to a lot of people in the world, I really like to work. Some people don't. Some people, I'm not talking about physical work. My personal thing as far as how I feel good about myself and what I've done in the world is I really thrive on seeing the physical evidence of my efforts. If I see a pile of whatever it is at the end of the day, even if it's all scrap reject pieces, I can say, I really worked hard today. Shame it wasn't worth anything. But, I mean, that really means a lot to me. I started off, my very first job that I ever got was working in a kitchen, and I got it the same way a lot of people did. I just started showing up, and I started helping. Started dragging out the trash and throwing it in the bin. Started mopping floors. Started scraping plates before they went into the dishwasher machine. I started with the things that I knew nobody else really wanted to do, because I looked at that and I said, this really needs to be done. And if I want to show someone that I have worth and I have value and it would be good to have me here, if I started doing those kinds of things that no one else wanted to do and had to be begged to do, that they would say, oh, there's a guy that likes to work. And that's how I got, you know, my very, very first job. I started out just hanging out at the kitchen, and they after a while got annoyed with me enough that they said, okay, you come here every day and we'll actually pay you now. And someone left, you know, and so there was an opening or whatever. Matter of fact, the day the person left, he left rather abruptly. He got fired. And they said, hey, well, you want to work? And I said, yeah. And, I mean, that was the whole employment process. Then I took that same knowledge, and this would happen to be at the School for the Blind when I was a student there at the kitchen. And then that same summer, I went home, and I lived very close to a really nice little lake and had a nice little Dairy Queen on it, and I went down there and applied for a job, and the guy that ran the Dairy Queen said, yeah. And that was, you know, that was the extent of the interview. And so I started showing up there because I was hanging out at the beach looking for women. trying to get a tan, and I started there. The very same thing. I knew how to drag out the trash. I figured out where the dumpster was. I knew that every day when he closed up at the end of the day, he wanted to hose down the sidewalks, get all the dumped over ice cream out of there. He wanted to get the trash dragged out. He wanted to wipe down all the tables and that kind of stuff. And I just started doing it. I didn't even wait for him to ask or anything. The trash was right inside the back door. I just grabbed it, drug it across, threw it in the dumpster, went and got the hose because I figured out where he put that. Started spraying down the sidewalks, you know, got a bucket and started washing down tables. 3 days, I had a job. Took me 3 days. I invested 3 days of my time into getting that job. Had a job and for the whole summer. Great job. I've done some other really rat-poor jobs, too. When you are in a position where the money that the federal government will give you to exist won't pay for your beer budget, then you have to start looking otherwise for other kinds of income. And so I worked at this job for, I think, a whopping 3 weeks, but I needed money. I cleaned brick. Now, you want to talk about a brain-numbing and hand-numbing job. I mean, this is about the bottom of the heap as you could possibly get. And I'm not sure that people clean brick anymore like they used to. They know they certainly do in other countries, but they knock down a building, they take all the old brick, they take it to this big lot, they dump it all out of the trucks. They hire a whole bunch of people like me, and you sit there with a hammer and a chisel in the hot sun, because it's outside, it's not in a building, or it's raining, or whatever it is, and you chisel the old mortar off the brick. You only get paid for every brick that you put on the pile that's in good condition. The guy comes along and kicks a third of them off the first day you're there, and he says, ah, those aren't any good, you got too many chips in them, you know. So you're working for 2 cents a brick. 2 cents a brick. You know how many bricks you have to clean in an hour to make a dollar? That's not too hard of math. There you go, 50 bricks to make a buck. That's a lot of work. That's a lot of hammer strokes. And one day this little Chinese man, when I went to lunch, I don't know, third or fourth day, I came back, my brick pile was a lot smaller. His brick pile really grew over the lunch hour. And he didn't think I could figure out where my bricks went because he knew I didn't see. I saw just a teeny bit then. I had a cane and that kind of stuff, so he knew. And he was the only one that didn't take a lunch hour. And I went over and I had a brick in my hand and he had a ponytail. And I grabbed hold of his ponytail, and I had the ponytail in one hand and had the brick in the other hand. I said, I want my bricks back. And he said something in Chinese that I'm not sure what it was, but kind of made me, I don't understand English. So I moved my brick a little further away from his head as if I was going to bring it upside his head. I said, I want my bricks back. And he nodded yes. So he brought my bricks back. I don't know if he brought back the same amount he borrowed during the lunch hour or not, but at, you know, 2 cents a piece and a lot of work. I lasted about 3 weeks at that until I found something a little better. There are a lot of jobs out there in this world that do not require a college education. There are a lot of jobs out there in this world that require really good fine motor skills that pay really good money. A bicycle mechanic today can make $40,000 a year working in a bicycle shop if you are good at what you do. That is the key. I worked at a bicycle shop. How did I get my job at the bicycle shop? Same kind of thing. I went into the bicycle shop, said, you got any old bicycles around here that, you know, that you don't think are worth spending the time to fix? And the guy says, yeah, you know, we get these. This was, and they're starting to be popular again because of all the mountain bike things. Yeah, he says, we have some of these three-speed hubs for bicycles, three-speed. They're internal hubs. They're in the rear wheel. He says, they don't work. We don't know how to fix them. So I took them home. I sat down at the table outside. I tore that sucker apart about 400 times and put it back together until I figured out how it worked perfectly, and how you made them work. What was going to break in them? How you fixed what was going to break in them? I went back, you know, 3 or 4 days later, brought it in. Says, I know how to fix these things. Can have a job. He says, you can fix those? I said, yeah, piece of cake. So he handed me 10 of them. He says, here are 10 of them. He says, none of them work. He says, if you can fix these, you have a job. At the end of the day, I had all 10 fixed. I had a job. You know, it's today, bicycle shop. Auto mechanics jobs have gone from shade tree mechanics to computer car fixers. So if you're going to want to go into the automobile trade, that particular job is an incredibly good combination of really good fine motor skills and good computer skills. So you're going to have to, if you want to go that direction, you know, you're going to have to find some really good computer skills. But I happened to be listening to National Public Radio the other day, and they were talking about a job which I trained myself how to do once upon a time that is an incredibly simple job. If you can say over, under, over, under, over, under, you can have this job. Putting tennis rackets, the webbing and tennis rackets. I learned how to string tennis rackets. You know how much the guys that spring the tennis rackets for, like, Serena and the Williams sisters, you know how much money he makes a year? Somewhere's around $200,000 a year. He strings tennis rackets for an eight. Can you say over, under, over, under, over, under? You can string a tennis racket. It is, I'm not trying to say that these guys' jobs aren't important, but it is a job that is incredibly easy if you have fine motor skills. There is a little machine that hooks up to the string as it comes through. It has a weight on the end of it. It sets the tension for you. You pull the cord through, over, under, over, under, over, under. Come out through the hole at the end. Set the thing in the little thing. Let the weight pull it down to the prescribed tension. Put the little plug in. Put the string back in. Go over, under, over, under, over, under, over, under. Come out the other side. Put the little thing on. It takes 15 minutes to string a tennis racket. You know? If you could work yourself up to the spot where you were stringing tennis rackets for the Williams sisters, you make some pretty darn good money. But do you know how many tennis courts there are in the town you live in? Okay. Do you know how many sporting goods stores there are in that town? They sell tennis rackets. You know, somebody there is stringing them. Okay. A really good spot. I mean, go hang out at the, you know, if you have a brother or sister or aunt or uncle or cousin or somebody who plays tennis, you know, they can tell you a little bit about it. Look at a tennis racket. They're incredibly simple. You just have to, there's a little, like everything else, there's some technical issues about it that you have to know. I don't know how many people of you live in rural communities. Okay? If you live in rural communities and you're not scared of work, agricultural work is got to be pretty good darn paying jobs. If you work for someone who runs a dairy, they have to milk dairy cows 365 days of the year. Those cows don't take a vacation unless they happen to go to the hamburger factory. And then their longevity after that point in time is, you know, in our bellies. So, you know, it's all downhill from when they reach that point. But, you know, there are a lot of people who do not want to work Saturdays and Sundays. There are a lot of people who don't want to work holidays. There's a lot of people who don't want to work every day to start with. But if you're willing to go work every day and you want a job, there's a good spot to start. Is it the best job in the world, shoveling cow manure and milking cows? Probably not. Is it a good spot to start? Yes. If you're interested in the agriculture business and you're interested, you know, in animal husbandry and those kinds of things, the agribusiness in our country is, you know, multi-billion dollars a year. I don't know if you go to the grocery store very often. Some of you like to eat, some of you may not. You go down the aisle in the grocery store and you look at certified organic, and you look at free-range chickens, and you look at free-range, certified organic free-range chicken eggs or whatever. Those businesses, you can start in your backyard. If you start looking at the Hadley stuff, how do I start a business? If you're looking for something to do and you like to garden or you like to be outside or you like animal husbandry, those are things that you can start with almost zero money. If you go to the Burpee Seed Catalog Company and you have $100, I guarantee you, you can grow $10,000 worth of vegetables with a $100 investment, if you're willing to put the time in and do the work and tend to them and learn the business. Being employed is learning your business. I tell everybody, and everybody in this room who's been up here before me has said the same thing, know what you want to do and know about what you want to do. Every single thing there is in this country that I know of that people are employed for has some kind of trade organization or magazine that goes with their industry. The agricultural business, matter of fact, in almost every county has the agricultural extension agent. His job is to help you, or her job, depending on who she is. Their job is to help you. If you go to them and say, I would like to be a worm farmer, and you may laugh at worm farmer. I happen to know a blind gentleman down in South Carolina, or did know. He just passed away about 4 or 5 years ago. He probably only made $300,000 or $400,000 a year. There is a program. If you're rural and you're agriculture, they have a program right now. They're begging for people to be in that has to do with disabled people in the agricultural business. They're begging for people in it. There's a young lady, I saw an article not too long ago, who started a business in, I think, Virginia or West Virginia, who's blind, who's growing plants that people buy to put in their gardens. She went to school. She got an agricultural degree from an ag school. She couldn't get a job. She went to this organization, and they set her up with a greenhouse. She's up and running. If you ask your county extension agent in your county, they'll absolutely be able to tell you the name of it. I can't. If my brother was here, he'd remember it. Agribility. There you go. Agribility. If you lose a leg or they're working a lot with vets with, you know, people coming back, they're working with, you know, how you have lifts and that for to get people in and out of vans and cars and that. They're actually got some people out there building now lifts and that for people to get, you know, people with disabilities up and off tractors and everything. A tractor used to be a really bad place to be. Now you sit in your little air-conditioned tractor with your GPS and your computer and you drive around in the field and you don't even steer because the computer steers you. Yes, agribusiness does. Yeah, because they set the young lady up down in Virginia or West Virginia in the garden, in the greenhouse business. One nice thing about plants is blind people, they're pretty darn recognizable. Almost every plant has a different leaf structure, a different stem structure, a different smell, a different texture, a different taste. I work in the wood business. I can tell you most woods in the raw state, I can tell you by either taste, texture, or smell, because every wood's different. Oaks, maples, cherries, birch, beeches. I mean, they all have characteristics that lend themselves to being recognized tactily, so that you can be aware of that. Back to what I started to say about the industry that you choose or want to be in. There is always a trade organization. That's a really good spot to start, is the trade organization. Almost all of them have a trade show, either regionally, statewide, or national. I just went to the National Woodturners Association show in St. Paul, Minnesota, just 2 weekends ago, and wandered around and talked to people. I've been in this business a long time, so inevitably I always run into somebody at one of these shows that I know, which is always makes me feel good. And so that is an incredible place to network. Find out who the local president is of whatever it is that you're trying to do as far as the trade organization. Almost every one of these things have a magazine, especially all of the skill-based stuff. I'm a Corian fabricator. The Corian Fabricators Association has their own trade journal, and they have their own show. Corian is a material that's used for making countertops. I go to all their trade shows, you know, or did pretty religiously. I got to know a lot of people in that business, and all of those little things, you know, go take the seminars, go take the little certification classes, even when you're not employed in it. Almost all of them have certificates that you can earn in whatever area it is. I did a seminar one time back a couple years ago for employment. And to a group similar to this, and we were talking about jobs, and I went to the industry that I'm very familiar with and looked at how many different jobs there are related just to the construction industry. And there are thousands of jobs that are related to it that most of them don't require any kind of college education, but a lot of them require you going and taking some sort of certification to learn more about it. If you want to become certified as a lead abatement person, there is an incredible opportunity for jobs right now because there's a lot of federal money available to rehab older houses in cities so that they become habitable again. So if you become a lead abatement specialist, you could go take all the classes and become certified. Once you're certified, You can go to Joe Smith Contractor, a construction guy, and he says, well, what good can you do me? And you can say, geez, I have a lead abatement certification. And he'll go, you do? Because it's hard to get. It takes time. Most guys, you know, most guys like me that are out there, you know, swinging a hammer, you know, running a saw every day, we don't have time to go take one of these classes. I mean, there's, you know, 100 hours, I think, for the lead abatement class. So, you know, go to your voc rehab person, whoever it is, and say, my job goal is to become a lead abatement specialist. Here are the classes I need to take it at my local community college. This is the certification I'll get when I'm done. And in the city we're in right now, there are approximately X many contractors. There must be someone who wants a lead abatement specialist. Okay. And Dick's tapping me on the shoulder and saying, I talked too long. You got 7 minutes less. Take some questions. I do have cards. They say blind ink on them. Yeah. I have had, just so you know, my small resume of things that are absolutely 100% good hand skill jobs. I've worked at a bicycle mechanic. I worked as a ski technician. I worked stringing tennis rackets. Those are all involved in the. I worked as a Volkswagen mechanic because I took the classes. I worked small engines fixing my own plus other people's. One of the jobs that I fell into as a young kid was walking through the cemetery. In old cemeteries, very oftentimes they can't get mechanized digging equipment in, backhoes and such, so they have to dig the graves by hand. When I was a kid, it was the best great part-time job I ever had in my life. It paid $25 when the minimum wage was $1.25 an hour. You could dig a grave in about 4 hours. That was phenomenal money when I was a kid. I fell into that job. I did. Yeah, that's how I figured out there was open graves in the cemetery. I cut through the cemetery every day on my way to the beach. Yeah. Stand up. If you know the job is open and you know that they're hiring for it, go in and say, hey, this job's open. I know you're hiring for it. I don't want a penny. I'm going to do this job for you for 2 days. And if you don't like how I did or what I do, don't hire me. If you like how I did or what I've done, hire me. I mean, put it out there. I mean, make them make the decision. You know what? Yeah. I will tell you that being unemployed is a job if you're interested in being employed. When I have been unemployed at different points in time in my life, I got up every morning at 7 o'clock, drank my coffee. I started working at 8 o'clock in the morning. And when at 5 o'clock at night, I quit doing the phone work and I started working on trying to figure out what I was going to do for the next day. That's how you find a job. It is a job, finding a job. And you don't quit until it's done. It's kind of like building a house. You start at the foundation. You keep hammering away at it until you put the ridge shingles on the very top, you know, and then it's done. And you will find a job if you do that. I have never failed to find a job when I've been looking for a job. Yes. Stand up, please. Bring your microphone.
Thank you.
Well, let me tell you what I did for mine, just so you know. I went to a college to get a degree in furniture production management. And as much as I claim as hating bookworms and not being a bookworm, I managed to fight my way through most of that. But one of the things we had to do was do a factory layout. And I went to the professor and I said to the guy, he says, okay, I cannot draw the way you draw on the computer. Or this was right in the middle of the transition from where people were going from real paper to computers, so they were doing some of both in this class. I says, I cannot do that. I says, may I use tactile graph paper, braille graph paper, and use this wall here in your building, you know, in the classroom to put mine up and do it here on the wall so that it's tactile. And about two-thirds of the way through the project, he came up to the front of the room one day, and he says, okay, everybody, we have a major problem. He says, everybody's engineering project for doing this plant layout is starting to look an awful lot like George's. Because it was huge. It was on the wall. You could look over there, and you could see where the water lines went. I mean, where the sprinkler systems went, where the air hoses went, where the dust collection went, where the dust collection point went. That was one of the things he was a real big stickler on, was how to do really good dust collection. And that was one of the things I happened to really excel at. I'm a really good engineer. I mean, if there's one thing I've learned really well in my life how to do is good engineering. And I had that part of it down. So he was particularly proud of my dust collection. And everybody's dust collection was starting to look like mine. So. What do you want to do? Not a problem. Why do you think you have to be big to be? How big is a cat? There you go. Now lions, if you're looking for lions and tigers and bears, that's a whole different story. One of the things I actually was on my list was the incredible good spot to look if you're looking to go into those kinds of things is there are. Every town has all kinds of these places that do grooming services for cats and dogs. I mean, that is an incredibly great spot to start to get yourself some experience to want to be a vet tech. Okay? Go to one of those places. Start volunteering at your Humane Society. Get some experience. Once you have experience, it's really hard to tell somebody they can't do something when you come in and you have the knowledge, you know, you have what they're looking for. Are you reading the vet tech journals? Okay, because there's some incredibly good research, agriculture. I'll tell you, if there's one thing that our federal government has spent really good money on with great information, it's agriculture. We spend gigantic, because it is the biggest business in our country.
Okay, well, I guess we need to wrap this up here. If anybody would like to talk to George, I'd mention that he probably will be willing to talk to you outside the room and give you business cards or whatever. George, we did have a request. If you could, can you come back in the afternoon for when we do the open session?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, you'll get a second crack here at George. Thanks a lot, George. I do appreciate it.
And, George, you have an advanced invitation to come back next year.
Okay.
Just right outside the door here. Okay. We have, this is the time we have on the agenda for announcements and for if anybody knows of a job, you can speak up from the audience. We'll handle it that way. If anybody is looking for a job, this would be a good time to talk. And keep in mind that this afternoon we are going to have an open session at 2:25 in the afternoon and another one of these announcement sessions at 2:15. So you will be able to get more individualized attention here. But I know we have a couple people who might be willing to speak. Sherry, do you want to come up? Sherry Miller is from Benetech, who the rest of us know as Bookshare, and we love Bookshare. And if you don't know about Bookshare, you should know about Bookshare, because Bookshare is wonderful. So, Sherry, here you go.
Thank you, Dick. You all can hear me, and some of you have heard of Bookshare. How many of you have heard from Bookshare?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Oh, this is nice. It's preaching to the choir. I'm here to answer any questions, but also to give you some updates on Bookshare. You know, we are we'll be 10 years old this February, which is pretty exciting. It feels like it's just been a few weeks. How many of you are Bookshare members?
Yeah.
Yay. Great. So you all are part of the 145,000 people in the country that are currently members, and that number is growing. Who has a guess for the number of books in the collection? How many books do you think we have in Bookshare? As of last week, we had 114,000, and we're adding them at the rate of 1,000 a month. We have over 125 publishers that are starting to give us books in EPUB, and that means they're really easy to convert to DAISY and Braille-ready format, and they're just flying in. I think there are sparks coming out of the building because it's just there are so many. Part of that, and Allison and I are going to speak at the NABS meeting on Monday night, but part of those are university presses. So we're getting a lot of scholarly works. We don't have a lot of journals yet, but you know, as you all know, we do have the NFB Newsline, which are all the newspapers and periodicals every day, and we're really excited about that. But I'm also here to tell you, ask if any of you have looked at our career resources. We have an incredible collection of books for people who are looking for work. So I'm going to touch on a few things, but we have books, and in fact, Allison Hilliker, who's with us out of her home in Arizona, Allison just wrote a blog. So this week's Bookshare blog is by Allison, and it's about finding a job and having a career. And she highlights several of the books. So a few of the titles, there's something called Career Renegade. This is a good book. It tells you how to turn your passion into a career or a job. Because most people who are happy in their work, many people find that following their passion can very easily turn into a job. So I know that that's one way to go, and this book is going to outline the steps for how to do it. What color is your parachute? You know, that's an old book you probably are familiar with, been around for years, and we have the latest editions of that. There's a book called The Job Search Handbook for People with Disabilities, several books on resume writing, and we have a lot of books on interviewing, how to interview for a job, how to get up for it, how to anticipate the questions that they're going to ask, and how to answer them and how to nail that interview. So if you're interested in looking for work or you want to change careers or it's just time to get some new information about work, look in the Bookshare collection. Now, you all know how to search. There's how many ways to search in the Bookshare collection, those of you who are members? Yes.
I'm sorry.
The question is, how many ways are there to search in the Bookshare collection? You know about Bookshare?
Yes.
Good. Yes. Title, author, ISBN, publisher. Subjects. So for subjects, so if you go to the homepage, you're absolutely right. You go to the homepage, you're going to see three things. You're going to see search, you're going to see advanced search, and you're going to see browse. So you all know that just the first search button, that's actually a full text search. So if you type in tsunami, you're going to get every single book where the word tsunami shows up, every one of the 114,000. So people that I talk with say that that's a little overwhelming. So if you, let's say, typed in interviewing, all the books that had information about interviewing would come up. The second is the advanced search, which is the title, publisher, ISBN. And then also you can look at books with worldwide rights. So if you're from outside the United States, you're going to have a smaller collection of books to look for. to look through, and also books that are freely available. Those are for people who are not Bookshare members who might want a book from Bookshare. So then the third way is browse, and we have several special collections, and we have several categories. So if you're looking for books on the military, for example, if you're a returning vet or you have some interest in military issues, you can go to browse, go over to categories, and look up books about the military or books about children or books about animals or books about nature. So the probably the best way to look up books for jobs is to go to that full-text search, that first search box, and type in jobs, veterinary tech jobs, for example, or jobs in computing. So along with that is we also have books that teach you how to do stuff. So we have all of the O'Reilly technical manuals. So O'Reilly has a lot of books for vocational education. A lot of computer science books are in the O'Reilly books as well as in the regular collection. Anytime the O'Reilly Publishing Company comes out with a new book, they send us the digital file right away, and we can put it in right away. So that's a great resource for you as well.
I know you're going to be in the exhibit.
Yes, we are.
And so you guys can talk with her some more in the exhibit hall. But you have something that you would like to award to our teachers.
I do indeed. You know that if you're a student, Bookshare is free. We're funded by the government. But if you're not a student, it's a $50 a year fee for unlimited books, any part of the Bookshare membership, plus two free reading tools. You know, we have Victor Reader Soft and Don Johnson's Read Out Loud to download to read the books if you don't have another source on hand at that time you want to read. So the Bookshare memberships are $50 with a $25 one-time setup fee. So today I have a free Bookshare membership for someone in this group. And actually, we're going to also, if you come to the booth and give us your name, we're going to be giving away a free membership every single day from the booth. So that's cool. And then several of us are speaking throughout at a few special workshops like this, and we will also give one. So my question is, who came the farthest? Where have you all come from? You can raise your hands. Yes, I'll start over here on
Portland, Oregon.
All right. Where are you from? Antonio, Texas. Dick, you're going to have to help me on this one. This is going to be hard. Phoenix? Oh, wow. And where are you? In the pink shirt, second row. It's okay. Where are you from? Wow. All right. Gentleman in the red shirt? Egypt. Oh.
Anybody
come to South Carolina? All right, in the where else? Okay. Yay. Where? New Jersey. All right. Maryland. All right, at the East Coast. Boston. It feels far to travel that far. Well, I don't know about you, Dick. What do you think?
I think diagonally across the United States here, you'd have to go with Oregon or Washington.
By 3 miles. All right. So here's the certificate. You're going to use the code NFB11, which isn't brailled, but if you come to the counter and tell us. And the rest of you, come see Erin McConnell at our booth. She's our membership person, can sign you all up or at least give you more information. Dick, I'm going to leave a bunch of my cards right here. We're here the whole week. We have 8 of us from Palo Alto, California, and we're delighted to see you all. So thank you very much.
Okay, we have a couple more people who want to make announcements so that they don't have to leave their seats here. Here's the lucky winner, Don Mitchell.
Right. I have a couple things. Number one, I'm looking for a new boss. That's really a neat position to be in. I'm actually on the search committee. I work at the School of Piano Technology for the Blind in Vancouver, Washington. We teach blind people to tune and repair pianos. I've been working there for 38 years, and my boss is retiring. I have a job description here in print and braille, if anybody's interested. I want serious people who are really interested. The job entails a good deal of fundraising, a good deal of working with budgets, and a good deal of putting up with Don Mitchell. that job is available. It will close when it's filled. It opened about a week ago. And when I left, we had no applicants. So if there's someone who is really interested in this kind of a job, I'd love to have you do it. Number two, I want to retire someday, not right away, but I want to retire, and we need people to become piano tuners, not only to make a good living, but also so that we can raise you up and make you into teachers and administrators at the school. So we need people who are piano technicians who can help us to keep the school going for another 62 years and keep people out there making good living. So I just wanted to bring that to you. I'll be here all day. I have cards. I'll be in the room all day throughout the seminar. Be happy to talk with anyone. And this afternoon, I'll hope to talk a little bit more about what we do. Dick?
Thank you, Don. Now we have Brian Basham.
We have a new program starting in San Francisco. We're calling it the Job Site Conversation Series, and it's something that can be done anywhere in the United States. What we do is we believe that there's no better way to get that hunger in your belly about getting employed than visiting somebody who's just as blind as you are, who's doing a job that you want to do, or maybe a job you haven't considered doing. And so we are going as a group every week, every Wednesday, in a posse, 10, 15, 20 blind people interested in employment, to the job site of an employed blind person. We sat down and we wrote 60 individuals just in the San Francisco Bay Area who are doing interesting, neat jobs, and not just the pinnacle jobs, not the professors and the people who are lawyers and all that, although we'll visit some of those, but also people who are doing teaching auto shop in high school, people who are doing office work, people who are massage therapists, the whole gamut. And we visit weekly. We have lunch afterwards. And when we talk for 2 hours with the person who's the blind employee, and then we talk to her supervisor for another maybe 45 minutes. What did the trick? What made you decide to hire this person? How can we take the next step in our own careers? That kind of thing. So it's an excellent thing that chapters might want to think about doing in their own communities. It's a great way to build confidence, and the reality is just unstoppable. We're turning people away from these things now. It's so popular. The second thing I want to talk about is in San Francisco, we are looking for a person who has the passion to lead an army of around 40 young transition age youth through their first job. Our California Department of Rehab will pay for the first 4 months of work for sort of work experience jobs. So we find jobs in the community. This person would help find those jobs and then work with the individual, often the first job they ever had, removing barriers to employment, showing them it's okay if you don't really know the computer that well. We'll teach you how you can learn. It's okay if you're a little rusty on traveling. We'll show you how you can do that. So we're looking for a coordinator to do that. That's a full-time job in San Francisco. I know it's a hardship post, but somebody here might be interested, and I'll be here afterwards. Thank you.